This is episode number 775 with world record holder Colin O'Brady.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Success is not measured by what you can accomplish, but by the opposition you have encountered, the courage with which you have maintained the struggle against overwhelming odds. Orison Madden. And Walter Bagehot said, "The greatest pleasure in life is doing what people say you cannot do." Welcome to this interview. We've got world record holder Colin O'Brady, who's a professional endurance athlete, motivational speaker, and adventurer. He's a three-time world record holder, and in 2016, he set the Explorers Grand Slam and Seven Summits speed records. He's the type of a guy who comes up with this extreme adventure and thinks about, how can I create results with something that no one's ever physically done? How can I overcome the most challenging odds the physical body can actually endure and then set a record? He just finished doing a solo expedition across Antarctica, unguided, with zero help. He carried a sled across for almost 60 days by himself. The guy is a true leader in learning how to push the mind and the body beyond its limits. And in this interview, we talk about how Colin and his wife came up with the idea to break a world record, the power of being able to adapt to all challenges, physical and mental, how he overcame major injuries early on in his life. He endured an extreme fire where almost all of his body was burned, and he said he would never walk again. And now he's doing this, which is crazy. And the power of flow state and what it can do for you on a daily basis. At the end of this journey in Antarctica, he essentially went for almost a day straight to finish out and push through what normally would take 3 days. And he talked about tapping into this flow state of mind, even when you have no energy, even when your body is weak, when your mind is broken. How do you tap into that? And I'm super excited about this. Make sure to share it with your friends. Also, you can see the full journey of Colin's recent adventure. Every day he posted a photo in Antarctica, which is crazy to see how he progressed day by day. So you can follow him on Instagram, Colin O'Brady, over there as well. And this episode is lewishowes.com/775. So make sure to tag me over on Instagram, post it on social media, text this link to a friend of yours, because I know it will inspire them to push a little further in their life.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
When you visit a state as big and diverse as Texas, there are a million different trips you can take. Let's say you've got an appetite for whitewater kayaking. You can get your own.
So this is why they call it Devil's River.
Trip to Texas. Or maybe you have an actual appetite. I'll take a pound of brisket, six ribs, three links of sausage, and a piece of pecan pie. Trip to Texas. Go to traveltexas.com/get-your-own for the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
Big thank you again to our sponsors. And without further ado, let's dive into this one with the one, the only, Colin O'Brady.
Welcome everyone back to the School of Greatness podcast. We've got the legend, in the house. Good to see you, man.
Oh, man, great to see you. How you doing, man?
Doing good?
I'm doing great.
Good, man. Now, for those that don't know about you, you just finished an incredible journey in Antarctica, crossing 55 days, right?
Yeah, 54 days.
54 days in an unaided journey, dragging a 300-pound sled or something crazy like this, where no one was able to touch you or support you in the process of crossing this part of Antarctica.
Yeah.
And it was 54 days. You had like a 60-day plan.
Yeah.
But you sprinted the last like 2 days or something.
Indeed,
you didn't stop.
Indeed, yeah.
And it was incredible to watch this journey. You've been all over the news lately, and you were kind of racing against another guy who was doing the same thing. And what an incredible journey, man. Congrats on completing
it. Thank you. Yeah, it was a wild ride, to say the least. You know, I had a few other world records to my name previous to that in the mountains, but this was a world first. You know, this was something that no one in history had ever accomplished. And going back 100 years, people have tried. You know, Ernest Shackleton 100 years ago was kind of one of my heroes, one of the early pioneering explorers who said, like, man should cross the continent of Antarctica. And it's been done now in teams of people, or as well as, you know, using wind aid, kites, dogs, but it has never still been done in its most pure form, which is solo, completely alone, unsupported, so no resupplies of food or few drop-offs, and unaided, meaning, you know, no kites, no dogs, no vehicles. Just this is like a man versus nature, mano-a-mano out there. And so it was a beautiful challenge to take on, as I'm really, you know, just fascinated as myself, is just tapping into the potential that I think we all have inside of us,
right,
and unlocking that. So this curiosity inside me as an athlete led me to want to go after this. And I didn't know if it was possible. I literally named my project as I set off the impossible first.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing, man. Now, Antarctica is huge, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty big. How big is it, so people know?
Gosh, I think I should know the answer to this question. It's massive. The traverse that I was making, so it was basically from one side of the ocean via the South Pole to the other side, was just under 1,000 miles. So
1,000 miles.
Yeah.
Pulling a sled
in
the snow. What was the temperature most of the time?
So the average temperature in Antarctica is about -25, -30, and that's with no wind. Antarctica is the windiest and coldest continent in the world. And so often days would be 50, 60 mile per hour wind gusts, and you'd literally have, gosh, I don't know, -80 degrees wind chill. The easiest way for me to describe it, I know you're from Ohio, so I know you know a little bit about cold weather and whatnot, but what I will say is this. I couldn't experience that cold until I realized I took a cup of boiling water from my tent and I would throw it in the air, it would immediately turn into ice. Like, that's how cold that is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Crazy.
So then for me, that's like, sometimes it's hard to put in perspective where it's like, yeah, it was cold. Wow, that's real cold. No, like, it's so cold that boiling water can turn into ice in a second.
Now, how do you make sure you keep your temperature, I guess, regulated? Because I sweat when I'm moving, even in the snow.
Yeah.
And can you sweat in temperatures like that?
No. So there's a sort of an adage in the world of polar exploration, which is if you sweat, you die.
Wow.
And it potentially a little hyperbolic, but to be honest, it's pretty true. In that, if you're pulling a 375-pound sled, it's amazing. You can stay pretty warm while you're moving. But you stop for 5 seconds, 10 seconds to get a swig of water, to eat a little bit of food, and you could immediately go hypothermic. And so it's a matter of what I say is staying comfortably cool. So it's moving at a pace that keeps you warm enough, but also being aware enough of your body temperature that you're not sweating. But when I would stop, I would eat food every, you know, kind of a steady flow of food and these column bars that were, you know, self-created for this project. I would, eat very, very frequently, but even in those little like 30-second breaks, I'd put on a huge puffy jacket.
Really?
Like immediately. It's not like you don't stand around in the cold at all. I mean, it's that cold that, you know, hypothermic frostbite can set. And I got a little bit of frostbite on my cheeks and nose from these windstorms. Like the conditions are real out there, no doubt.
Wow, man. How many world records do you have for this first?
So
you've done Everest, you've done all these different mountains.
Yeah, so I set the world record for something called the Explorers Grand Slam in 2016. And so that was one of my first big world record projects. And the goal there was to be the fastest person to complete the Explorers Grand Slam, which is climbing the tallest mountain on each of the 7 continents. Of course, Everest, Denali, Kilimanjaro, et cetera, as well as complete expeditions to both the North Pole and the South Pole. And these polar journeys were just across the last degree of latitude. So that was only 69 miles to reach each of the poles. poles across the last degree of latitude, which
unaided
seemed hard at the time, but now when I've done a 1,000-mile journey in Antarctica, but that project was 139 days consecutive, so all 9 of those expeditions, Everest, Denali, etc., back to back to back to back without any rest, 139 days.
So you broke the world record for the fastest
cumulative time of that. You know, fewer than 50 people had ever completed the Grand Slam. Most of those people have done so in 5 years or 10 years, trained for an expedition, rested between, planned the next one, and I built it to do it all consecutively throughout.
Crazy, man.
Yeah, yeah.
How long does it take to get to the top of Everest?
So generally, Everest expedition will last about 2 months. In my case, I was coming straight off the North Pole. So what's crazy is the North Pole is at sea level. It's literally ice floating around in the middle of the ocean. And I had to go straight from there to Everest. And because I was at sea level, I was not acclimatized at all. So flying to Everest, but I was late and delayed because the sea ice was cracking in the North Pole. Literally, you can fall through the cracks into the frozen ocean. It's a crazy place. There's polar bear. I mean, it's one of the wildest landscapes ever in the middle of the floating ocean. You're at the North Pole and the ice is floating around you. You're actually moving away from the pole and you're having to walk back because it's just a GPS point in the middle of the ocean, basically. But to fly from there all the way to Everest, I only had 3 weeks rather than 2 months to climb it. And that in itself was just an epic battle. And this came because of the weather windows on that project towards the end of my project. So Everest was the 8th of the last 9 expeditions. But what happened up there is I made it into the death zone, which is above 26,000 feet. It's known because the human body, even with supplemental oxygen, can't survive for long.
Oh my gosh.
And
how many feet is that up?
That's at 26,000 feet where the death zone starts, but Everest is 29,000 feet.
Oh my gosh.
And so I pushed for the summit, my very first push. No, I didn't have any guides with me, just one Sherpa who was climbing with a guy by the name of Pasang Bodhi, incredible Nepalese Sherpa. And we got caught up in a massive storm. I mean, the weather came in, winds blowing, you know, 50, 60 mile per hour winds, and we quickly know we got to abandon our summit attempt. We were lucky to even get our tent up. It took 2 or 3 hours. Had to descend off the mountain. Thought my entire project, you know, had disappeared. But we kind of found the strength and courage to go back up in another massive, you know, challenging storm, but made it to the summit 3 days later. But you'll love this. So I come back down. I get back into Camp 4, into the death zone. I've summited Everest. It's a, you know, beautiful moment for me. And I'm one mountain away from setting the world record. And I'm about 2 months ahead of schedule. So I'm like, if I get Denali, like, I could probably do this. Like, it's coming into reality. And my wife, Jenna, who's not just a supportive partner, but really just the co-creator with me. We dream up these projects together. We built a nonprofit around inspiring young people and kids. There's tons of public schools, hundreds of thousands of public schools kids following along this project at the time. And that's really where our passion lies, around health and wellness. Now we can talk more about that later. But anyways, I call home to Jenna and I say, Jenna, you know, I just summited Everest. We got one mountain to go. And she goes, okay, great. Like, how are you feeling? I'm like, well, I'm exhausted. I'm still up at 26,000 feet. It's going to take me a few days to get down and we can regroup for this next mountain. And she goes, yeah. And she says something I'll never forget. She goes, I actually need you to put your boots back on right now. I'm like, wait, what? And she's like, yes, we've been doing some calculating back home, and it just so happens that if you can get down from Everest today, I've arranged for a helicopter to pick you up in base camp. The helicopter's going to take you to Kathmandu, but there's no time for you to rest in a hotel. An evening flight's going to take you to Dubai, to Seattle, to Anchorage. And instead of having 3 weeks to climb Denali, you'll have 3 days. But if you can do all that, you'll set not one, but 2 world records. You can have the 7 summits record as well. So it's this moment where I just laugh now. I love this quote. You've probably heard it, but it's a Henry Ford quote. He who says he can and he who says he can't are usually both right.
Right.
One of the ones I've lived by. And this is a moment of like, you know, A, I know better than to not listen to my wife because she's a badass and she's amazing and knows when to push me. But I'm like, all right, maybe we can pull this off. And sure enough, 100 hours after standing on the summit of Everest, I'm on the other side of the world at the base of Denali, 3 days battling this insane storm, but on May 27th, 2016, make it up to the summit of Denali, and in this case, set not one world record, but 2 world records.
Wow, man.
Finishing this project.
And 3 days later, started climbing Denali.
Yeah, 100 hours after being on the summit of Everest, I got to the base of Denali, and then Denali usually takes 3 weeks itself to climb best case scenario, and only about 30 or 40% of people attempting it even make the summit, and I managed to get to the summit in 3 days, battling this ridiculous storm there as well.
How do you get there in 3 days? How's that even possible?
Like I said, it was come straight down from Everest, not sleep a night, go all the way back down to base camp through the other 4 camps. There's a helicopter waiting there that took me to Kathmandu, fly to the other side of the world via a bunch of stops. Jenna's there in Anchorage to pick me up and drive me to the base of the national park. But in Denali, a bush plane has to fly you into the base of the mountain. It's a whole, like, the logistics, like, not, like I said, Jenna is a mastermind, not just of pushing my body, knowing my mindset, knowing how to support and love me and be compassionate, running our nonprofit, but logistics, man. Like, we're talking about 9 locations. location, 7 continents, red tape, I mean, all this sort of stuff. So it was an incredible project for us to cut our teeth on. And I mean, in the spirit of what I know you're about, I love this podcast, man. And I love just the entrepreneurial spirit that really, you know, kind of shines through in the innovation. Like, Jenna and I dreamed this up with nothing. Like, we dreamed this up on a whiteboard. I had been racing triathlon professionally. We had gotten engaged. I mean, like, what do we want to do with our life? Like, what do we care about? And we had this moment where we literally wrote on a whiteboard in our one-bedroom apartment, like, what if we could set this world record but build a media campaign around it that has a lot of impact? And it sounded like this great idea, but like, wait, I haven't really climbed mountains. We've never started a nonprofit. I have like 200 Instagram followers. We don't have a platform. We know nothing about media. We know nothing about PR. We're literally Googling on day one, Google, what's the difference between marketing and PR?
Sure.
But in the end, it was a year of no, no, no. Everyone saying no, like no support, but just built it day by day, kept showing up. And ultimately, a year and a half later, I'm on this project. She built it into something that had 500 million earned media impressions. We had a nonprofit. We had a partnership with a nonprofit where there was millions of kids following along, all these things. But it came out of literally nothing. We both didn't grow up with money. We don't have this background in any of these things, but just this belief of like, we want to create this and put this love and impact out into the world through this storytelling, through this. So it was fun to see that come to life. And now this Antarctica project is the latest version or iteration of this passion for us.
How many of these journeys have you done so far?
So
different adventures.
Yeah. So the other world record that I set between this was that we did something called the 50 high points. And so I set the speed record for climbing the tallest mountain in each of the US 50 states.
Are like little hills.
Yeah, some were little hills. Yeah. Exactly. But it was fun, man. I did it in 21 days. The previous record had been 42. But the funnest part for me, because for me, I don't really want to think, I don't think of myself as this athlete in the arena, like, hey, watch me do this world record. To me, that's like not interesting at all. In fact, I've started to think of myself way less as an athlete and more so as an artist. I've started to think of myself, my canvas just happens to be endurance sports, but through that, I want to paint these masterpieces that I can share with people out in the world that have this reverberation of positivity and inspiration. And so with this 50 High Points project before Antarctica, our goal with that canvas, with that masterpiece or that art project that we were trying to create, we did something we called the Forrest Gump effect. So we literally got on social media and we said, hey,
join us.
We're going to be going all over the country. What we want to do is meet people. We want to meet people in each one of these states. Show us your backyard. Hike a mile with us. Meet us on the top of a summit. We're going to be coming through here fast and hot, but like, come hang out. And we met thousands of incredible people. We met, you know, remember in Virginia, we were on the summit of Virginia with, you know, 50, 60 school kids, students who had never camped out before, never been in the backcountry, never been on a hike, but they came and joined us on a 7-mile hike. I met an 85-year-old great-grandmother in Illinois. Granted, the hike in Illinois, it's pretty flat out there. It wasn't huge, but she did it. It was a mile hike, came with us, and I walked back with her and I said, what's the secret? Like, what's the essence of life? And she's talking to me about life and love and her story and compassion. And so it's this way of, yes, I am doing these art projects or these athletic feats or world records or world first, whatever that is, but as a way to just connect with humanity, have these amazing conversations, meet people both in person and virtually. And for me, that's what lights me up.
Yeah, amazing, man. Why do you want to do these things in the first place? Because this is like, we did a, for those that don't know, we did Jesse Itzler's 29029 climb, which is like the equivalent of Everest, but it's like the dad's club version of it, where you're like climbing a mountain, what was it, like a mile up?
Yeah, so it was like a mile up.
Yeah.
What was it, like 1,700 feet per lap? It's in Stratton, Vermont, and you have to do 17 laps of it uphill, which equals 29,000 feet, the equivalent of 29,029 feet, the equivalent of Everest.
And this is like, you know, the dad's club version of climbing Everest, but I'm telling you, I was dying.
This is
35 hours, and I was just like dead.
It was amazing. So
I'm like dying, dude.
We met there. We shared a tent, and you know, obviously we get to know each other. We're having a good time, and you guys are out there chipping away. You know, I'm climbing the laps.
Not trained for this at all.
No, you guys were coming off your big event.
Not in shape. Yeah.
And I remember you were like, I remember coming in. I was 2 laps ahead of you guys. I'm like, I'm gonna go get a little bit of sleep, and it was like 11 p.m. And you've been going for like 15 hours straight. And you're like, Colin, I want to get to the same number that you're on so that tomorrow we can all finish together. And I was like, awesome, great. So you're like, I'm going to head about for 2 laps. And each lap had been taking like an hour, maybe an hour 15, yeah, hour 20, 15, something 20, like that, right? and 6 hours went by and I woke up and I was like, oh man, Lewis just must have blew me off and just went through the night like a badass. Sure enough, you unzip the tent and you're shaking.
I thought I had hypothermia, dude.
You're like, turn the heater on, turn the heater on. I'm shaking. Trying to heat the tent up.
There was no heat. You were just smiling cozy in your tent. I was like, dude, I feel like.
I was like, bro, did you finish? And you were like, no, I just did the two that you said I was going to do. We got to get back tomorrow.
But it was like so wet outside.
Oh my God.
We were just walking through water mud, and it's like snowing or whatever, and it was miserable. But I knew that if I timed this out, I was like, I need to get a certain amount of hours of sleep. If I don't get to 13 laps, I think it was, like I probably won't finish tomorrow with like 4 hours of sleep. And I remember waking up, you were like, okay, we're gonna wake you up in 3 hours, it's like 4 hours. I'm like, okay, I'll be good. You woke me up and I was like, I want to lay here all day.
I was like, Lewis, let's go. And you're like, yeah, bad.
I almost had a moment where I was like, I don't think I'm going to finish.
Yeah.
I had that moment in my mind. I was like, I gave an amazing effort. My body is busted, broken. Yeah. I was like, I can't break through this. And then I think you left after being like, okay, but hope to see you out there. Yeah. And Matt was like, dude, we're doing this. Let's just do one lap.
Yep. That's how it starts, man.
You got to focus on one lap. Not like, I have five more to go.
You're starting to do the time. You're like, that's like 6 or 7 more hours.
I was like, I'm done.
But in the end, you guys got out there and crushed it. 35 hours with like an hour remaining.
Hour to go.
And like, I mean, that event's tough. Like, what, 50% of people finish and don't? What I love about that event, though, is that it's a celebration of everyone being out. That's not a race. It's not competitive. It's kind of, you know, Jesse says it's you against you. And I love that. And then that's why I think that race is a race. You know, that event is really cool because you guys are out there. I'm out there. Like, crazy, we're hanging out. It's just a fun, like, participatory
great
thing.
Experience.
Such a good experience.
We didn't have a strategy going into it until day two. When we had to stop like every 20 feet. Once it got steep, I had to drag my legs up the hill. You're like walking up, just like no poles, just having fun. I'm dragging my legs. I feel like I tore both my hip flexors. And I realized then, like, you've got to have a strategy.
Yeah.
And you had a strategy your whole time. Every time you do one of these experiences, you have a strategy. You don't just say, okay, I'm going to just push through until I'm dead.
Yeah.
You have a strategy. And it sounds like Jenna's really helping you craft this strategy.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too. In person or on the phone with your local agent or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
But how does someone, you know, for me in this physical challenge, like I got up and I did one lap and then I was like, okay, let me do one more.
Yeah.
And then one more. And I was like, okay, now we have 2 more to go.
Yeah.
We can finish this. How do people push through these mental or physical challenges when it seems like, gosh, it's going to take me 10 years to launch a podcast like what Lewis has, or 10 years to build this business or to do this thing? How do people push through that barrier, and how do you do it?
For me, people love to ask me about my physical training. How do I get strong? There's some fun stories about the crazy training that I did to prepare for this and whatnot. But I believe that it's the muscle 6 inches between your ears. It's about flexing your mind is really what it comes down to. And I describe that moment of Jen and I writing our dreams onto this whiteboard. Sadly, as you know, that's where 99.9% of dreams die, as an idea. Because all of a sudden we have these doubts in our mind. Oh, I can't, or it's gonna take 10 years, or I could never catch up to this person or that person or this metric or that metric. But it's about showing up. It's about getting out there every single day. So in Antarctica, so actually my first day in Antarctica, I think, is really emblematic of that. And to be fair about the 2029 event, you're like, Colin, what are you doing in a couple weeks? You seem like you're in pretty good shape. And I was like, well, I'm gonna try to cross Antarctica by myself in like 2 weeks, literally like 2 weeks before I was leaving. So I was pretty well trained at that moment. But I get out there, we've been playing this project for well over a year. It's a world first, no one's ever done it. There's so many doubters and naysayers. Someone actually died 100 miles from the finish line 3 years ago trying this project. Another one of the best explorers in the world went out there the following year, and after 52 days ran out of food and had to be picked up and didn't make it. So there's a lot of people, there's a lot of print articles and big magazines saying it's physically impossible to do this thing. And so, like, I know that going in. And so we build this strategy. And the unsupported nature means you can't take any extra supplies with you. Basically, what you have in your sled to start, no one can give you anything, essentially. And so in that case, like, weight is of the essence. And so I pack my sled as much of food and as much fuel. The fuel, I melt the ice into water. And I don't bring extra anything. I literally don't even have an extra pair of underwear with me for 54 days because, like, I can't. I'd rather have 100 more calories in my sled of food.
Same underwear.
Like, same underwear for 54 days.
That's straight. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's some soggy underwear right there.
That's not nice.
Do you clean it at least? You try to? No, not much.
You just kind of, like, ride it out.
Wow, man.
So, no, not smelling
good. One day of chafing and you're done too.
Yeah. So, yeah, look after your body. But I get out there, I fly, this plane lands me on the edge of the Antarctic continent, takes off. I'm all alone out there, right? Like, I've dropped off alone. And, well, actually, you had mentioned before there was another guy out there, which is, like, important to mention at this point, because another British explorer, one of the actually the most experienced in the world in terms of the amount of miles traversed in Antarctica and various other projects, he also decides that he wants to try to be the first. So not only am I now racing history, but this guy's a British Navy SEAL equivalent, you know, special forces guy. His name's Lou Rudd. And he's like a badass, and he wants to do this as well. It was his friend who died 3 years ago. Wow. He's doing that to honor him, and I got a lot of respect for all of them. I mean, there's a camaraderie as well, of course, and we both know what we're going through, but we also both clearly want to be first. And he's looking at me like, who's this, you know, bit younger guy who doesn't have the real experience in Antarctica? Who does he think he is? And I'm kind of like trying to be like confident in my plan. And so plane drops us off. We're at a mile apart from each other, equidistant from the first waypoint, the first like GPS marker on the map. And I get out there and I've got this video of me being like, it's a blue sky day. It's great. After all year of planning, it's finally time for me to like try to cross Antarctica. I'm taking the first step and I bend down and I pull the strap on my sled to tighten it for the first time. And ping, the strap breaks. No, literally, the strap breaks. Like, it's minus 25 and the plastic can't handle it. Breaks. So right out of the gate, I'm like, wow, this is gonna be a long journey. It's before the first step. So then I strap into my sled, and the sled's the heaviest on the first day. 375 pounds to start was about the maximum I thought I could pull. So I put as much food as I could, even though I knew I was gonna burn 10,000 calories per day, and I factored I could carry about 7,000 calories. So I was gonna lose weight every single day straight from the get-go, even eating 7,000 calories. That's how intense and cold it is. And so I start pulling my sled, and you asked me before about sweat. About 1 hour in, I'm sweating, and I'm like, wait, this sled's so heavy, but I can't not pull it without sweating. And so I start sweating. Then I realize I actually don't think I can pull the sled, and I start crying. I literally start crying. But what happens when you cry when it's minus 25 degrees out? It freezes to your face. So I have frozen tears to my face, and I'm 2 hours into this journey. And so I do the only thing I can think of is I call home to Jenna.
Wow.
And so I pick up the phone and I go, "Hey, babe, yeah, we may have named our project the right thing. It appears to be impossible," because we had called it the impossible first.
Wow.
And she's like, "Oh," and so she tries to, you know, she's like, "Okay, well," and meanwhile, I'm seeing Lou disappear on the horizon with this beautiful, like, ski stroke, like, totally knows what he's doing, like, strong and steady out there. And, like, at this point, I can't even think about the fact that there's a race right in place. I mean, I'm just trying to, like, get through the first day. And so she says to me, "Colin, how far are you from the first waypoint?" Like, she knows the route. We've studied it. She knows everything. The first waypoint's only a few miles from the drop-off point. And I'm like, "I'm 0.63 miles from," you know, it's as if I'm saying it's a million miles. But she's like, "Okay, so you're half a mile from the first waypoint." Like, this goes back to your original question of strategy, right? And she's like, "Do me a favor. Like, whatever you do, I know it's heavy. I know you're sweating. I know you're exhausted and you're probably a little bit afraid, understandably. Like, get to the first waypoint. Get to that first waypoint, and you'll have felt like you got somewhere on the first day." So for the next hour, I struggled and battled and get to that first waypoint, set up my tent, get inside my tent, and I say to Jenna, like, I call her again, it's kind of our safety check at night off the sat phone. She's like, "How you doing?" I was like, "Obviously, I'm stressed." She says, "Look, I actually went out there intentionally with not a lot of music, not a lot of podcasts, because I wanted to explore the silence of these flow states that I hope to tap into in my mind, something I'm very curious about, the sort of mental side of this." And she goes, "Tomorrow, do me a favor. Try to find the flow, even if just for a minute or 2 minutes. It's going to be a hard day." And so just those words, I went to sleep and I was like, okay, I made it to the first waypoint. I'll get up tomorrow and kind of regroup. And then I woke up, and I'm big on mantras, but this mantra had never been with me before this, and just came to me out loud as my alarm went off to wake me up on my first real full day out there. I said out loud to myself, I said, "Colin, you are strong, you are capable. You are strong, you are capable." And that ended up being my mantra every single day,
really,
waking up for the rest of the entire 54-day journey. And sure enough, that next day, was it stupid challenging? Yes, but instead of 2 miles, I made it 8 miles. And I found that flow state for a minute. The next day was 9 miles, and I found that flow for 2 or 3 minutes. And so we had a strategy. It went out the window on day one.
Yeah.
Had to refocus on the mind, adjust a few things with our strategy because I was hoping to go further distances in that. She's like, "Well, like, maybe it's not shorter distances at first, but as it gets lighter, maybe it'll go longer," and all this kind of stuff. And so how do you strategize and plan for something that's been told is impossible? You're stepping into the unknown. It's by being adaptable and ultimately realizing that these things are happening in our minds, these doubts, these fears. That's a human thing. I don't care who you are. I still have them. I have 4 world records and I've had, you know, some bit of success in my life through challenges. But like, I wake up every day with doubts and fears and challenges. But it's being able to quiet that in my mind and continue to get to that first waypoint or get to that next step forwards in whatever you're doing.
Man, what did you do to get into flow every day then, besides the mantra? How did you get into flow and how did you stay into it?
Yeah, so that's something that I've just been fascinated with. So I grew up as a kid as a swimmer. It's funny, I have 5 older sisters actually, and I'm the baby boy, an older brother as well. But I'm a little boy of 7, blended family, but a big family, a loving, supportive environment. And my sisters and my parents would always be like, "You're always talking all the time. You're always this." Like, I was trying to hang out with them, follow my sisters into their room, like always like chatting and all this kind of stuff. But what I realized is I spent 4 hours a day as a kid swimming, 2 hours before school, 2 hours after school, putting in those reps of quiet. Swimming's this weird sport where you're staring at a black line, like you can't talk. There's no eye contact. There's no, you know, really can't really chat to your teammates even. You're kind of in this zone. And so before I knew the word flow state or high performance, this is me as a kid, I realized I was sort of tapping in and out of those states. And I became more conscious of that as I went through my life and became a, you know, professional triathlete after a whole other crazy tangent of my life, being severely burned in a fire in Thailand and being told I would never walk again. We can talk about that if you want. But the more so, what happened when I was racing triathlon is a friend of mine came to me and she said, "I don't know much about sports." This is Turkish woman who's a wife of a good friend of mine named Ece. And she says, "I don't know much about sports, but just by observing this, I see that like this is all in your guys' minds out here. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like,
so on swimming or the outdoor?
This was triathlon. So this is triathlon. And she, this is when I was raised in triathlon profession. And she said, you know, I'd recommend that you go to these meditation retreats. And I was like, cool, I'm interested in meditation, but I don't like know a lot about it. I haven't done this. This is 2011. And she's like, yeah, if you heard of Vipassana meditation, it's these 10-day silent meditation retreats. 10 days, no reading, no writing, no eye contact, deep meditation. And she's like, you should try it. And I was like, well, don't I need like a little background in meditation before this? And she's like, no. Like, just do it. It's free. There's centers around the world. It's completely free to go. Like, go. And so me being the kind of, like, jump in head first type of person, as you can probably tell here, I was like, great, I'll go. So my off-season in triathlon that year, I signed up for this meditation retreat. And my stepdad, he drives me up the retreat. And he goes, hey, Colin, like, I've pretty much never heard you shut up for a minute in your life. And so I'm going to wait here in the parking lot for an hour. Because once you realize this is a terrible idea, I'll be here waiting to drive you home. Wow. You know, joking. My stepdad is this amazing mentor and influence in my life. Incredible man. But he's literally going, like, you're pretty extroverted. And you're telling me you're going to sit in silence by yourself for 10 days. Sure enough, I stayed for those 10 days. And it had just a profound impact on my life of learning about that self-awareness in my mind, in my brain, et cetera. And so what, from that practice, which I've gone back to this 10-day retreat, I try to go every single year if I can, done several, and as well as have a daily practice with it, I've kind of taken that into my canvas, into my artwork, into my sport, and this curiosity of the mind and where we can go in our mind and brain. And so one of my deep curiosity about Antarctica, honestly, was, yes, unlocking the physical potential inside of me, but as a gateway to do that, exploring the mind. And what better place to be alone in this endlessly white landscape? The sun never sets. There's no change of days.
There's no dark.
There's no dark. It's a blank white canvas. And like I said, I literally deleted almost all the media from my iPhone as to not. I actually had a couple School of Greatness podcasts, ritual podcasts, a couple, a few podcasts, and a few albums out there. I listened to some Paul Simon, Graceland, a couple others. But there's very few. I spent 80, 90% of the time in complete silence. And it was a beautiful thing to explore that. So how did I tap into that flow? Like I said, some of the times it was 30 seconds. Some of the times it was a minute or two. But as I kept on these repetition of days exploring this place in my mind, sometimes it was days, two days, 3 days, where the sequence of days would come through in high performance. And the stakes are high. It's 50, 60 mile per hour winds. If I let go of my tent, I have no shelter. It's gone. It's 80 degrees wind chill, minus 80 degrees wind chill. But I'm finding the space in my mind that is locked in and calm. And the most kind of most profound experience of that was actually on my very last day. So it's worthy of mentioning, after the sixth day, I did catch up to Mr. Captain Lou Rudd and surpassed him and ended up in front of him the rest of the time. Mm. And on the 52nd day, I woke up and I'm 77 miles away from the finish. And I'm thinking it's about 3 days, probably give or take that. It's Christmas morning. And I wake up and I get outside of my tent. And the deepest flow state of my entire life just comes over me. Mm. I just realize, I recognize it, I say my mantra, I tap in, and I start exploring. When I'm in the deepest flow states, I'm also hyper aware. And so I start thinking, like, how many more miles do I have to go? How much time would that take? Oh, it's 3 days, but what if I did it back to back? What if I did it in one big final push? I've never gone more than 33 miles in an individual day, and I average about 15 to 17 miles a day. So I'm 77 miles away from the finish, and I'm 53 days in this expedition. But I get into this place in my mind that's so deep, where I feel this strength and this power and this flow, that I start to say to myself, whoa, we have this capacity as humans. Not me, but as humans. And I'm tapped into the vibration of my family and friends and the school kids that are following along, and just this radiant positivity that I'm shining out but receiving back in such a significant way, that I tap into this flow, and for the next 32 hours, I don't stop.
Wow.
I continue onwards. I have to stop at hour 18 to put up my tent to melt a little bit of snow to get some more water, because I'd ran out of water. Call home to my family. It's Christmas night. It's 7 p.m. for them on Christmas night. They're all gathered together. They're like, you did your best day ever. 18 hours. I can't believe it. You're almost a day or two from the finish. And I was like, I'm not stopping. I'm still going. And my mother, who's been a huge influence in my life, and certainly Jenna, my sister, these strong women who have just been like these amazingly positive influences on my life, they hear it in my voice. And of course, as a mother or as a wife or as a sister, you're a little bit worried. Your person is out there in this intense environment. But they reflect now, as they've told me the story from their point of view, and they have it recorded on Christmas Day, this conversation that we had. And they were like, we could hear it in your voice. You were more focused and more clear than you've ever been. And they just said, I can't wait to hear from you in 12 hours. You're going to cross this finish line and create history.
Wow.
Go live your destiny. That's and it was crazy. Just this beautiful, beautiful moment of the mind. And I think, I mean, I'll say the, you know, coming back home and just ask all these questions in the media and press, which is, you know, super humbling. And this question that kept coming up and it keeps coming up, which is, Colin, are you superhuman? And my question is simple. I was like, yeah, I'm superhuman. And so are you. Mm. And so are you. Like, what I'm tapping into in my mind is accessible to all of us. And like, yes, you may not want to walk across Antarctica by yourself. In fact, I don't blame you for not wanting to do that, for seriously. But like, whatever it is, you talk about business, entrepreneurship, innovation, music, art, love, creation, positivity, whatever that is, like, that is within us. And that's what I tapped into out there, which is the most special thing for me to come back Amazing, and be able to man. Share is that resonant positivity and the power that we all have within us.
It's crazy, man. What was the things you were saying to yourself the final 12, 15, 20 hours? Like, are you saying the mantra over and over? Are you white space in your mind? Are you having a conversation with yourself? Is it kind of random?
What was cool about that really deeper flow was, I said, the clarity. And so it was actually, two things happened. One, the passage of time started to feel different. You know, 32 hours. I mean, if I told you to sit here at your desk for 32 hours, you'd be like, bro, it's like, come on. Like, or we just climbed 29029 for 35 hours. We're talking, like, it's a long time to do something like that. And I'm just staring at this compass. I mean, just literally staring at a compass in the endless white space.
So you're looking at a compass the whole time?
Pretty much, because it's very hard to, you can't even really see the distance in front of you, especially when it's white out and these blizzard conditions. I'm just staring at something.
Wow.
So you're just blank, because blank can be in your
you're
mind.
You're pulling it around your waist or your shoulders?
Pulling around your shoulders. I've got a compass strapped to my chest that I'm staring down at.
Skiing.
And it's white on white. And sometimes, yeah, skiing, but like with skins on the bottom. So it's not like, people think skiing is basically like glorified snowshoe. So it's got skins on the bottom just to give you a grip, but so you're not digging into the deep snow. So anyways, pulling the sled, but yeah, in that flow state, I'm thinking about what actually happened in those last 15 or 20 hours, and this was really cool, is that I realized that all the memories we have. So if I said, hey, Lewis, tell me about your high school graduation. You probably have a memory pops in your mind right now, like you've got an image of that day. But then we're going to keep talking, and we're going to talk about other things. You'll get distracted. But in that quiet space, in that flow state, the memories in my mind, even of the mundane, became so rich. And so I start thinking about all the points in my life, but I'm a 5-year-old kid on a swimming pool deck with my mom encouraging me to dive in for my first swim race, but I'm not there for a flash instant in my mind. I'm there and I can feel the wind blowing and I can see my mom on the other side holding a red towel and I can see, you know, my sister who's gonna race in the race behind me and all this. Or like, I started going back to driving to school with my sister Caitlin actually, and we did that every single day to high school for years and years and years. You know, we're siblings. Sometimes we would talk, sometimes we wouldn't talk, sometimes we listen to music, sometimes we wouldn't. I actually could start to remember full sequences of 10, 15 minute these drives over and over and over again. So in this flow state, I was almost in this lucid dream state where I discovered that the memories, everything we've been through, even those memories you think like, that's not a part of me, or I've let that go, or that's not there, like they are there and in rich detail. And so in this flow state, I'm actually remembering all of the things that happened to me through my life to lead up to this moment. The kid in a swimming pool, the 22-year-old that got severely burned in a fire in Thailand, was told I would never walk again, spent 3 months in a hospital, my mom's, you know, recovery, helping me recover through that, and the positivity, triathlon, heartbreak in relationships, love, family, community, all of these things in this lucid detail, in this dreamlike state, walking across Antarctica for 32 hours to the finish line. It was an unbelievable experience.
Crazy, man.
Yeah.
So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all. Or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare, but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LEWIS.
Tell me about this burn in Thailand. What happened? When was this?
Yeah, definitely a pivotal moment in my life, to say the least. Just after graduating from college, I'd been a swimmer in college and didn't grow up with a lot of money as a kid, but I'd always dreamed like, hey, like one day I want to like see the world. You know, I had this kind of wanderlust inside of me. I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and glad that I grew up there because even though we couldn't travel far and wide, we, you know, my parents would take me hiking and biking and in the outdoors and things like that, a place that really embraces that. I'd never really been abroad, hadn't seen other countries much, anything like that. And so I'd been painting houses as a kid since I was 15 years old. And every summer I would save up, you know, $1,000 in my like life savings account. And so when I graduated from college, I had $10,000. I felt like I was like the richest man in the world, you know, like from eight summers painting houses. And that was the money I also had to pay for like books and like, you know, day-to-day expense. So it was just this carving off this little amount every single year. But when I graduated, I had $10,000 and I was like, I'm going to go travel around the whole world as long as I can. And so I bought a one-way plane ticket. And the first plane ticket was from the West Coast to New Zealand. But this is back in the day. You remember a place called STA Travel? It was like this student travel agency. This dates the story. So I graduated college in 2006. I think we're similar ages.
2005.
Actually, did I read your birthday is March 16th?
Yeah.
Me too.
No way.
Yeah, bro.
What year?
85.
So 83.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow,
my
man.
Sister, Caitlin, who I mentioned, is March 15th, 83.
No way.
The day before, literally the actual
Holy
day
cow,
before.
Man.
So we've got some symmetry. We've got some Pisces
like
symmetry.
Four or five people on March 16th.
Yeah. So we're both March 16th.
Wow,
birthday.
Man,
it's funny.
Crazy.
I don't know. That popped up in something I saw there. I was like, Louis got the same birthday as me.
That's cool. That's cool.
Anyways, so I set off from the world, and the first stop in STA Travel tells me, oh, you're buying a one-way ticket for a student. You can actually stop in Fiji for free. And I'm like, great, for free? Like, heck yeah,
hey,
sign me up.
Yeah.
I'm a 22-year-old kid just trying to like, you know, see the world a little bit. So I stop, and sure enough, on this tiny little beach in Fiji, on this island that you could walk around the circumference in 5 minutes, I meet Jenna, 2007, who's now my wife.
In Fiji.
First stop of my trip, I meet this 20-year-old, beautiful college girl who's on a study abroad in Australia. She's American, but I meet this girl, and it's like kind of a chance encounter for a day or two, and then like I continue traveling, and she moves back to Australia, but our lives can intertwine, and here we are married, and she's the light of my life and the strongest anchor of everything that we've done. And so I'd say this trip started off to a good start.
Right.
Then I went and hitchhiked around New Zealand. I mean, I basically have no money. I'm hitchhiking, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, oatmeal,
hostels.
Youth hostels, sleeping on floors, like, I mean, whatever I can get, you know, but just to be out in the world, it was amazing at the time. And I find myself on this rural beach in Thailand, an island called Koh Tao. And have you been over to Thailand before?
I have.
So you've probably seen there's fire dancing and poi balls and all this kind of stuff. And at 22 years old, when a bunch of people are jumping a flaming jump rope, I thought to myself, like, sure,
do
why
it.
Not? That looks like fun. Clearly, hindsight is 20/20 because the rope, the flaming rope, wrapped around my legs, lit me on sprayed kerosene the length of my body, lit me on fire completely to my neck. I jumped into the ocean to extinguish the flames, which ultimately saved my life, but not before 25% of my body was severely burned, predominantly my legs and feet. And I'm here, I'm in Thailand, I'm in the middle of nowhere on a beach on an island. There's no hospital on the entire island, no ambulance. So I'm on a moped ride down a dirt path to a one-room nursing station, like the size of this room that we're sitting in right now, basically, with like one bed. And I have to go undergo 8 surgeries there, where there's a cat running around my bed in this makeshift ICU. And the worst thing is the doctors are looking at me through this sort of broken translation of cultural and language barrier, and they're saying, like, you'll probably never walk again normally.
Mm.
Like, the damage to your ligaments, the knee joints, the ankle joints, that's the depth of the burn, like, honestly, you're probably not going to be, like, fully functional, full mobility back again. And, you know, obviously super dark time in my life, just this downward spiral, physical trauma, emotional trauma. I thought I was this young person seeing this world. How could I be so stupid? I'm down on myself, all these things. And the heroine of this story is my mother, who's just this incredible woman. And I don't have kids yet, although that's something I would like, another adventure I'd like to go on pretty soon, I think. But my mother comes in, and I can only imagine what it's like to be a mother, to see your kid on the other side of the world in this makeshift hospital, bandaged to the waist up, having doctors say this. And I know now that she's afraid. She's in the hallways crying and pleading with the doctors, asking for good news, begging for anything. But she comes into my hospital room every single day with this smile on her face, with just this air of positivity, where she's going like, Colin, like, what do you want to do when you get out of here? Like, let's set a goal. Let's look towards the future. I'm like, Mom, are you kidding me? Like, my life is over as I know it. Like, I'm never going to be the same again. I mean, all I can see is the darkness. And she just fills me with this love and this positivity and leans in. And she finally says to me, like, do me a favor. Close your eyes. And I sit there. I'm like, okay, I'll play along. I close my eyes. She goes, visualize yourself. Just picture yourself in a positive light doing something in the future. And in that moment, for whatever reason, probably because I was an athlete, I guess, I see myself crossing a triathlon finish line. And I open my eyes and I go, fine, you want me to set a goal? And I'm kind of saying it as a precocious kind of kid just trying to play along with my mom a little bit. I'm like, you know what? One day I'm going to race a triathlon. And I love my mother so much for this. Instead of her going like, oh, I said set a goal, but maybe within the parameters of what the doctors are saying your diagnosis is or whatever, she's like, great. That's what you're gonna do. Let's learn everything about triathlon. I've never raced a triathlon before. I swam in college, but I never like bike competitively, run competitively. I don't even know like how you change your shoes from a bike to a run. I don't know any of this stuff. But she's like, great, that's your goal. And so it was 3 months that I was in that Thai hospital, and I was finally flown back to the United States, to Portland, Oregon, where I'm from. Haven't taken a single step. I was carried on and off the plane, placed in a wheelchair when I got home, and I'm in my mother's kitchen that first day. And my mom says to me, she goes, Colin, she goes, I know you've got this big triathlon goal, but you gotta figure out how to take your very first step. And she grabs this chair from our kitchen table that I grew up, you know, eating around. She puts it one step in front of my wheelchair. She goes, I'm gonna leave the room, but your entire goal for the day is to get out of that wheelchair and take one step and show me that you can sit in that chair that's one step away from you. It was 3 hours staring at that chair, like looking at it. And I finally, I get up, 3 hours of courage and strength. I haven't taken a single step in months, and I take that one step. And the next day, she moves a chair 5 steps away. And the next day, 10 steps away. Each day, a few more steps. And you went on like that for a year and a half. You know, the steps turned into moving from the couch in the living room to the dinner table at night. And then one time I was like, so I said, Mom, I'm jogging. I'm literally like shuffling down the street, probably like 30-minute mile pace. I mean, just like barely shuffling. But like that day, jogging just felt like flying. Like I'm just like on top of the world because I'm imagining myself racing this triathlon. And so sure enough, 18 months later, a year and a half after my accident, I'm trying to like get my life together. Like I gotta get a job. I gotta get out of my parents' basement. I take a job in finance in Chicago, 23, maybe just turned 24. I take a job in finance in Chicago. I'd studied economics in school and kind of trying to figure out my future, you know, like trying to do something, I guess. And I honor this goal. I said, I moved to Chicago and I was like, okay, they've got a big triathlon here. In fact, the Chicago triathlon at the time was the biggest race in the country. It was 5,000 or 4,000 participants or something like that. So I sign up for the race. I train at this local gym, asking these random people like in spin class, like, how do you change your shoes? Like, I mean, I know nothing. I know how to train because I'm an athlete, but I'm like, this injury, I don't really know. And I show up at the Chicago triathlon and I race the race and I finish the race. My grandmother, who's since passed away, she's at the finish line to congratulate me, like, you did it. Oh my God, you finished a triathlon, you know, a mile swim, 25 miles bike, 6.2 miles run. It's an Olympic distance triathlon. And we go and we collect my bike, and the way triathlons work is like people start in different staggered waves of 100 or so people, and we come back around after having lunch. She goes, don't you want to go check how you did in your age group or see like, you know, how'd you did in the event? And I'm like, sure, why not? Let's wander past the scorers table. We wander past the scorers table. I'm like, hi, trying to figure out what place I'm in. What's your name? Colin O'Brady. Go, we've been calling your name over the loudspeaker. You won the entire race.
Wow.
So I had placed first out of 4,000 some participants in my first race ever. And it was a complete and utter surprise. Even crossing the finish line because of the staggered start, I had no idea. I literally had no idea.
People
were finishing before I started because they started an hour before because they're in different waves and all this kind of stuff.
Wow.
And it was just this incredible moment when I really think about the entire sequence there and I look for, you know, this was 11 years ago now when this happened, of what's happened since then, is it was in that moment that I didn't go like, oh, wow, I'm the champion of Chicago triathlon. I'm so cool. I'm so amazing. What I thought about was like gratitude. what would have happened had my mom not come into that hospital room with this positivity, daring me to dream about the future, forcing me to set this tangible goal for the future? Where would my life have ended up, right? And so it's this moment where I look back and then I was like, wait, like I was able to do this, but I don't think of myself as special. I was like, as humans, I've realized like we all have these reservoirs of this untapped potential inside of us and can achieve these extraordinary things when we're focused, when we shine positivity and light, when we lean into those that we love and uplift and co-create together. And so really this journey that I've been on, these world record projects, ultimately I quit my day job as a finance trader and became a professional triathlete the next day, which is not like being an NBA player, MLB player, anything like that. It's like still sleeping on couches and floors, but I got to race my bike around the world for several years. And it was an incredible journey to be on, but it really started in that moment of turning this tragedy into a great lesson for unlocking potential inside of myself. And why I love and I'm humbled to be able to share the story in the formats that I get to is, you know, public speaking I do and podcasts like this or through my art creations and my projects out in the world, is that what I want to shine out in the world is this essence that we have this inside of us, that we really all have this ability inside of us to create and do incredible and extraordinary things with our life. And that doesn't mean like your name in a newspaper or having a tech exit or whatever. That's one type of high performance. But I mean like loving each other and leaning in and being happy and playful and enjoying life and co-creating, inspiring and lifting up all of the different ways that, you know, aren't necessarily the key metrics of success the way we think of them. But that's how I define it.
Yeah. Do you think it'd be possible to achieve everything you have without Jenna in your life?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Like that's the easiest answer. Thank you for asking. I have a softball of a question.
How much could you create on your own without that support?
You know, I think that, you know, there was 20 years of my life before I met Jenna, and it's not like I was doing nothing. I was a talented athlete, swimmer, you know, collegiate athlete, those type of things. But ultimately, the next level came from this partnership, from this teamwork. And that before I even met Jenna, although I had just met Jenna previous to this, it's having this strong mother that's influenced my life, these five sisters who brought me under their wing and teased me and played with me, but ultimately loved me and uplifted me. You know, my mom, when she's interviewed about certain things, she says, careful what you wish for when you tell your kids they can do anything they set their minds to. And she says that because she still worries about me, of course, as a mother would when your kid's going to go walk across, you know, Antarctica by himself. But she's proud of me. She's never held me back. She's encouraged me. But Jenna, in that partnership of that coming together of love and romantic love, as well as business savvy and strategy and support, I could never have done it without that. And I recognize in saying that we all don't, in this moment in life, when you're listening to this podcast, in this moment, like maybe you're not in a romantic relationship, or maybe you are, or maybe you're in one that's not serving you, or maybe you're not. But whether that's your romantic partner, your best friend, your brother, someone you have yet to meet, I believe we are stronger together. And although it's an interesting thing to say, because people have pointed out, like, if you just look at the top headline of the New York Times, man crosses Antarctica solo, it's like, oh, here's this guy completely by himself doing this badass thing that no one's ever done. Like, that couldn't be further than the truth of the essence of this. Like, I am a compilation of all of the people who have put love and energy into me throughout my entire life, as well as the people that have sat in the trenches with me when I've had a crazy idea on a whiteboard and didn't say, that's not possible. They said, cool, let's figure it out. Right. Let's create.
Yeah. What's the mission moving forward? You're taking some time to recover.
You're taking time to eat, to enjoy
life.
Yeah.
Are you back at the whiteboard soon? Or are you just kind of taking it all in right now?
For me, I finished 2 months ago yesterday. So it's only been 2 months since I finished. And actually, after finishing, I knew that Lou was just a few days behind me. And so as badly as I wanted to change those underwear and get out of there with a warm meal and get the heck out of Antarctica, I was pretty done with it. I wanted to honor him. And I waited at the finish line until he crossed. So I stayed there for a couple of extra days, waited for him to cross. He ultimately completed it, becoming the second person, the only other person on the planet that has done this crossing. And it was so amazing to be there, to be the first person to congratulate on him on what was an extraordinary achievement as well. So that was kind of the first order of business. I stayed in Antarctica a little bit longer. And then finally flew back to the United States, and I've been incredibly humbled by the press and the media and interviews and things like that. It's been amazing in that regard. And the reason that I am proud of that, again, is not just because I liked seeing my name in print, but more so it validates this art piece, this reverberation of positivity, and giving me this platform to speak about the things that I care about. And so having the opportunities now to, you know, I already was doing a bunch of public speaking before, but, you know, speaking at businesses and corporations, all the stuff that I do in schools with the school curriculums I do with school kids, and continuing my nonprofit work with Jenna and the stuff that we do there. I'm writing a book now. You know, all of these types of things is an amazing way to share this story. Are there other adventures on the horizon? Yes, I'm already, of course, sowing the seeds of those next, you know, adventures and way that I can push my limits. But what I'm really passionate about in this moment is having this ability to kind of take a breath, take it all in, and enjoy this moment. And enjoy the ability to build off this platform that I've created to really share those human messages out in the world that I think are so important. One of the other things that came into my mind when I was out there, it wasn't so much as a mantra, but this idea that kind of kept hitting me was these two words, which was infinite love, infinite love, infinite love. It just kind of kept playing in my mind, not so much as a mantra, but this realization that, like, love is not finite in this world. Positivity is not finite. It's not like a zero-sum game. Like, if I'm happy one day, that means you have to be sad. Actually, and I think, I mean, your podcast is an incredible, you know, example of this, in my opinion, of sharing and shining your light in the world and sharing that positivity. And so the more people doing that, and there's certainly people that have uplifted me to be able to have a moment in time right now where I have the ability to shine that back out in the world and have a multiplying effect on that. I love it when people reach out to me. You know, I was sharing this story every night on Instagram. I carried this satellite modem.
Crazy, man.
It took an hour to load one image every single night. So I'm exhausted at night writing this thing. And like, this thing's like, it's worse than like a 1995 AOL dial-up modem. Like, it's like it's super slow, one picture and it takes an hour. But I want to share it out. And it's amazing to have that come back and people having, hey, I followed you along and now I have started that business. Or I'm leaning into the love in my life. Or I'm going to the gym for the first time in this, just having that sort of, it's like, oh, I sent out this energy to the world and that's coming back. Not to pat me on the back, but it's like, not, hey, Colin, I watch you do this. You're really cool. It's like, hey, Colin, I watch you do this. And now I am taking that energy you sent out and creating in my life. And when that person does that in their life, I can only imagine the 5 other people that's going to touch, or the 100 other people that's going to touch, and the multiplying effect of that positivity. And so that's what I'm excited about doing. And I think you know that better than anyone, the power of that.
Dang, that's cool. Who is the athlete you admire the most in the world or respect? Who do you follow and admire?
God, that's an interesting question. I love that question.
It could be an adventurer or any type of athlete.
I'm gonna say two. This is like just off the cuff, the first thing that popped into my mind. And this is truthful. When I passed Lou on the 6th day out there, I said I've spent most of the time in silence. This is a true story. This is not like a candid, I'm on the Lewis House podcast, I'm gonna tell Lewis House story. This is this true story. I happened to pop on your podcast, and I had downloaded like maybe 10 episodes randomly, like the most recent 10, before I left. But again, I limited the content I had with me.
Sure.
And the first one I play is your Kobe Bryant interview. And when I had met you and said, hey, I just did this Kobe interview.
Right. I was like, you gotta check it out.
It's exciting, you gotta check it out. And so I had it up there. And, you know, I've admired Kobe from afar, although I'm a Portland Trail Blazers fan through and through. So, you know, we have a little problem with the Lakers, but they will beat us a couple times, you know, down the stretch in the early 2000s when I was a kid. But there was something about that interview and his ethic that was so pertinent to where I was in that day.
Perfect for you.
When he literally says, he goes, I'm trying to stay ahead of Lou. This guy's more experienced than me. He's like more badass adventurer, outdoorsman than me, you know, with all the miles he's done in Antarctica. And Kobe says in that interview, he goes, talks about being at the gym and being like, I'm just going to stay here longer than any other guy. I'm going to outwork him longer than any other guy. And so right in that moment when I'm in front of Lou, I actually clicked in and I go, okay, Lou and I are tied now. I was supposed to be out here for 10 hours. How long am I going to stay out here today? 1 hour longer than Lou.
My gosh.
He goes 10, I go 11. He goes 11, I go 12. So I would never have said before that Kobe Bryant was one of my favorite, but I'd say influentially in this moment, Kobe Bryant, that in his message of working and beating on the craft and him talking about studying the game film and the tape and all these things is a reflection of me as I work on my craft of public speaking or writing or creating these other projects. It's not only to look forward to the future, but to look back and learn these lessons from that. But that work ethic of working hard or harder than somebody else was really valuable in that moment. So him, and then the second one I'll say, which is more kind of in tangentially related to the same space that I inhabit, shout out to Alex Honnold, who just won the Oscar for Best Documentary with Free Solo.
I still haven't seen that. I need to watch it.
Highly recommend.
It's amazing.
And it's
is it on Netflix yet? I don't even know.
I'm not sure. Is Nat Geo? It's got to be coming on Netflix soon. Like they just won that Oscar. They're on film tour for it. I mean, Jimmy Chin and his wife who shot it and created. I mean, incredible piece. Talk about an incredible piece of art. Just the way that they created that film term. But that story, it's very easy again to look at that and say, wow, what a risky thing to do to climb El Capitan with no ropes. But I look a level deeper of that. And the focus and the mindset and the true high performance that it took to pull that off wasn't some crazy thrill seeker. It wasn't some crazy like, oh, I'm gonna like show this. Like that's a humble, kind, quiet guy who has been beating on his craft to such a level that he felt so, I mean, again, I'm biased because I love the outdoor community and stuff like this, but like to me, as a lifelong sports fan, a lifelong Olympic fan, I mean, a Michael Phelps or a Usain Bolt, I go on and on. I mean, traditional sports, NFL, Tom Brady, whatever you want to say. Like, I go across the gamut. But that performance on El Capitan, I believe, stands above perhaps every other athletic achievement on the planet as a true compilation of both physical craft but the highest order of mental focus and acuity to pull something off like that. So,
because it's life or death.
The stakes are so high, you're like finger crimp, but the style of which he did it to me was just so authentic in the way that he memorized the steps and the movements. It was almost like a dance out there. I don't know. I'm just, if you haven't seen the movie, highly recommend seeing it. But those two things pop into my mind as two really influential things that have happened recently that have had an incredible amount of inspiration and impact on me.
Wow. And when do you feel the most loved?
That's a good question. I like where we're going with this. This is great. When do I feel most loved?
Is it when you accomplish something big? Is it when you're in the strategy sessions? Is it when you're in the flow state? Is it when your mom says something to you? Mm.
I was just having a conversation about this yesterday. Jenna, of course, is the nucleus of this, but a dear friend of mine, a guy named Blake Brinker, has been a huge influence in my life over the past couple of years, and particularly with helping me with some of my public speaking and things like that. And we're talking about one of the times that I felt the most loved, actually, was a couple years ago. I had the opportunity to give a TEDx talk. And as you know, I don't know if you've given one or not, but you seem like the type of guy that
I'm
would have.
I've TEDx. Yeah, I've been asked to do many.
I was going to say, many people would want you to do that. But
waiting for a strategic moment.
The right one, of course. I was honored by the invitation to do that, and that's not something you get paid to do or whatever, but again, it's just that it's a format that I love and I've always found inspiration in, so I wanted to take it very seriously. And we ended up having, you know, he was a tech founder working on something else or whatever, and he kind of stopped what he was doing for a couple of months and really dove into the ability to help me craft this story. And this was a story of the Seven Summits and the Explorers Grand Slam and sort of talking through my journey, one of the first real bigger public. This is a couple years ago. We ultimately called the speech Change Your Mindset and Achieve Anything, and it's something I'm really proud of, but it's not the essence of that, the fact that it's, you know, 1.5 million views, I mean, that doesn't matter. The part that I felt loved in was that in a moment of creativity where I like had something I wanted to say but didn't know exactly how I wanted to say it and express it in the world, and Jenna was right there with me supporting me, a friend who has no stake in this, who has nothing to gain from this, just loved me and said, let's create together. Mm. Let's play. Let's laugh. And we ended up, it started out as being like, I'll help you out for a couple, hours and review a couple of drafts and like, let's hear you say your talk once. And it ended up me, Jenna, and him for 2 months, probably spending 100 or 200 hours.
Wow.
And yes, we created a TED Talk in the world that I'm proud of, but that the love was this playful space of creation behind the scenes of us laughing and we cried and we got into real stuff, not just about me and my story, but about him and his story and his life and Jenna's life and all this. And so I love these shared experiences, whether that's climbing a mountain with a friend, whether that's having the tangible goal of creating a speech or art or whatever that is. Those are the moments where I feel, I think I'm also intertwining joy, but joy and love in these moments of work and play and creation innovation together.
Yeah, it's cool, man.
Yeah.
Where can people support you right now? What can they...
Yeah.
I'm going to jump on the next journey with you.
Just base level, follow along on Instagram. That's a platform I'm most active on. Yeah. It's just my name, at Colin O'Brady. I love sharing my insights and visuals and images and my journey and path there. And certainly my next expedition or creation will be told through that lens as well as any other. So, and come say hi. I love it. I mean, I read my DMs. I love people, you know, saying hi to me, telling me what your plans are, your Everest, your canvases, whatever that is. I love hearing that. That's amazing. And I get so much inspiration from that. So come say hi on Instagram. Then at Colin O'Brady is just my website. It's got all my speaking stuff and everything up there. So you can find me there. And as I'm working on writing this book, it's not out yet, but it will be out next year. So I would love the support and love as I go through that journey. And you know, people hopefully like what I have to say in that medium as well.
So. Yeah. Well, your Instagram just blew up over, I think you had like 10,000 followers before.
Yeah, I think it was like 30,000. That's like
small. And then it just, every day I just kept seeing it grow.
200 and something now, and amazing, it's going up. So yeah, it's been fun to kind of dive into that platform. It's just it's a fun way to reach people and talk to folks.
If you guys want to go follow him right now, you can see the whole journey like day by day because he posted a photo, I think, almost every day.
Every day, yeah, every day.
And it was cool to just hear like, to read the captions and learn what you were thinking and what you were going through. So if you guys want to really kind of follow along, you can go follow you and watch that a couple months back. This is called The Three Truths, this question. I think you might have heard it from the Kobe interview. So imagine it's your last day. You've accomplished every dream that you've written up on a whiteboard. You've 100 world records or whatever you want to do.
All the world records.
Every world record, you own them. You're the first to do every crazy thing. You're still alive and happy and healthy, but you got to pick the day you got to go. It could be 100 something years from now, but it's the last day. And every book you've written and thing you've done, you've got to take that information with you. So no one has access to the content anymore. But you could write down three things you know to be true about all your experiences. The three lessons that you would share with the world. Mm. What would be your three truths?
I think the first one I would say is, achievement is not for the select few. It's for the person who can overcome what I think is the greatest obstacle of all, but our own minds. And the second you can tap into that mindset, there is that reservoir of untapped potential waiting to be released by you. You are the creator of that. So that was a lesson that I would definitely share with the world. So that's number one. Second of all, I said this before, but infinite love. Mm. Infinite love, this reverberation of the abundance of love that we have the capacity to both love ourselves, share out in the world, and the importance of that and how we can all uplift and create in that way. And third, I'm going to go with this mantra that certainly just changed my life. I would just write it down on this paper that you just said, this paper that I could leave behind for someone else to read. You are strong, you are capable.
I love that, man. Well, I gotta acknowledge you, Colin, for your infinite love. When I first met you in the tent, you just exuded this joyfulness. Even when we were climbing up and just dying, you were just like smiling and just talking along, pushing us forward with your energy. So I appreciate your inspiration. I acknowledge you for completing this. It's unbelievable you completed this thing when no one's ever done it. And the push you give people, you know, you striving to be your best and be superhuman allows other people to do the same. So I acknowledge you for all the gifts you bring in the world. And I also acknowledge you for, you're not like this specimen of a freak athlete.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not like this prototypical looking, shredded, like super speedy, fast guy.
Yeah.
You look like an average looking dude.
Yeah.
Not in a bad
no,
way.
No, I know what you mean.
But you look like an average looking athlete.
Yeah.
But you're able to push your mind past boundaries that most fit athletes can't. And that's what I acknowledge you for, showing us what's possible.
Thank you.
Even when it doesn't seem that way. So I acknowledge you for that, my man. We can follow you on Instagram at Colin O'Brady, website, get your book when it comes out. And what's your definition of greatness? Final question.
Definition of greatness. I think too often greatness is thought to be the amount of dollars in your bank account or the amount of Instagram likes or whatever external metrics are in there. But I'll choose something that I've sort of tapped into, which is impact. And so, you know, the amount of millions or billions or trillions or whatever you have, a reverberation of your impact on others and that infinite love that you shine out there. That's greatness to me. Mm.
Colin, thanks, brother.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
There you have it, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Colin O'Brady. Inspiring story. We can all tap into our potential so much more than what we've done in this life today. You can become that superhuman you've always wanted to if you just learn how to tap into it the way Colin has here. Anything can be possible. Continue to push beyond the limits of what you think you're capable of. Your body and mind can endure so much you have no clue until you're willing to put yourself out there and see what it can endure. If you enjoyed this, share with your friends, lewishowes.com/775. Tag myself at Lewis Howes. Let me know what you think. I reshare a lot of people's stories over on Instagram. So the best and most creative stories with the best comments, I usually reshare those. Again, make sure to check out Colin and what he's up to over on Instagram as well. Again, thank you all so much for being here. And let's wrap it up with this quote from the beginning. Success is not measured by what you can accomplish, but by the opposition you have encountered and the courage with which you have maintained the struggle against overwhelming odds. Orison Madden. I love you all so very much. You're capable of much more than you know. And as always, you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
No matter what you're a fan of, Texas has the trip for you. There's the trip to Texas and the trip. Or maybe you're the kind of fan who'd prefer a trip to Texas or a trip. Either way, go to TravelTexas.com/getyourown for the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.